Welcome to the Docs Who Lift podcast, where we distill and simplify the complexities of a healthy lifestyle, exercise, medicine, and weight loss. We're excited to bring you a podcast that's a prescription for clinical practice, scientific recommendations, and just real life. This is the Docs Who Lift podcast.
Hey, welcome back to the Docs Who Lift podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Spencer Andolsky, co-host Dr. Carl, as usual, super endocrinologist. We got another guest back, special guest, one of my good friends, Dr. Kevin Klatt, PhD, RD PhD, graduated from Cornell and doing a bunch of lab stuff. I don't know, he's a brilliant guy.
Hold on, tell people what an RD is, because you never know.
Registered dietitian.
Sadly, that's something you probably do need to define for folks.
Yeah.
We wanted him back on because he just wrote a whole an article, blog, I don't know what you'd call it, about MAHA, Making America
Some sort of healthy. Some sort of editorial, right?
It was an editorial. Wasn't it published? Was it actually published in a journal?
It's a annual review of nutrition reviews.
There you go.
Once a year, narrative type reviews.
Yeah, nice.
A bit more than a blog post, but
yeah, I just
yeah. Well, Spencer's an asshole.
It's not posted. So. I don't know. Anyway,
it's 20 pages. You read every word, right?
Yeah, I read every word.
Well, I think I saw what you wrote on Twitter, X, whatever. And you kind of put out just some of your main points.
Yeah.
And it was just on point. But when you, when you shared it, it was before the actual, this MAHA report that came out yesterday. Is that right?
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was last week.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Because we talked to you last week and and the MAHA report just came out. So the timing of this is fairly impeccable.
So for everybody out there, we've talked about MAHA before being a Trojan horse to basically bring in pseudoscience using some of what all of us agree. We want everybody to eat healthier and exercise, get more sleep and that type of thing. MAHA stands for Make America Healthy Again. It's a play off of the Make America Great Again campaign led by RFK Jr., who is a known, I would just call him an anti-vaxxer. It's really making, you know, healthy behavior political. And there's a lot of things there, but we wanted to bring Kevin on, Dr. Kevin, to showcase his expertise and his, the different points that he brought forth. Tell us
what the hell did you write about?
Yeah. What did you write about?
What's going on?
So the title is a bit tongue in cheek. It's Make America Healthy Again, ? The past, present, and future of dietary guidelines. And so it's these annual review things, these review journals are kind of, I think, a little bit nervous about AI coming through and these large language models that can just spit out reviews of things. So they asked a cohort of folks to just write something, basically write about whatever you want, which an open-ended question like that is challenging for sure. So I started writing. I was originally going to write a piece about just like hot topics, kind of thinking about like how do we pre-bunk almost on seed oils and all these things. And then the more I started writing, I was just deep in the history of nutrition. And as I was watching MAHA kind of evolve and talk, I was like, you know, there's so much history here that most people, I think, are not educated in. I didn't get this education. I kind of have like pieced together the history. I always encourage graduate students to go back and like, what makes you an expert in the field is knowing where you've been and where it's going. And I was looking for like, there's no authoritative write-up of all the ways that we've done nutritional guidance in America. And there's many ways we do that through the dietary guidelines, but before that, the DRIs and the RDAs, and then food guides, which you think of as like a people know my pyramid and people still talk about it, even though we haven't had it for quite a while. I wanted to write about that whole history going back to like 1894 with like what is benchmarked as the first dietary guidelines that Atwater put out, and then track how they've changed, evolved, defined terms. Sort of what has influenced them over time and how we got here, where we are now, as we are on the precipice of there's a 2025 Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee report that needs to get turned into the 2025 Dietary Guidelines. And supposedly RFK is just going to like throw those out and have a 4-page document. So it was, I've been writing this for like over a year. So it just sort of happened that it got published right in time for all the Maha stuff.
That's amazing. And, you know, you mentioned Atwater, you know, his grandson was a really good safety for the Denver Broncos in the 80s and 90s.
You guys are such a bro podcast through and through.
What a jerk. All right.
Is there any chance Luke Symbol will listen to this podcast?
No, there's no chance with that. All right. So Kevin, what were your main points in your paper?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what you guys saw. Either it was on X or
it was on X.
What the points I made there were. But
we'll just go through it and just say what were you getting across? What are some of the interesting learning points from it? And then we can, you know, evolve it into Maha stuff.
Yeah, so I think if you were to sit down today and like a priori lay out how we do nutritional guidance, and I think this is true of most things in government, like you wouldn't do it the way we currently do it. As it evolved slowly over time in response to various stimuli, and you know, we have this sort of odd mix of this old school idea of setting nutritional requirements based off of very like physiological outcomes of like you need to eat this amount of vitamin to make sure that this enzymatic reaction is like adequately occurring within the body. And that is still the basis of a lot of our nutritional guidelines, at least for nutrient requirements and recommendations. And one of the things I think in going through the history is like you see like 1894 all the way through mid 20th century, you have no mention really of chronic disease in a lot of nutritional guidance. And if you like think of now, the modern person thinks of like, what do I eat to prevent cardiometabolic disease and cancer is the whole focus. But the history of nutrition is overwhelmingly not that. It is not a focus on cardiometabolic disease. There's actually like quite a political or politicized showdown between scientists in the 1970s and leading to the dietary guidelines, first edition of the dietary guidelines in the 1980s, where chronic disease sort of makes its way into various national academies reports, the dietary guidelines, American Heart Association committees. It's not, and there's actually like congressionally mandated investigations of the national academies, which puts out the dietary, the DRIs, and previous to that, the RDAs, to investigate like why they're putting out conflicting information about whether diet can or can't prevent chronic disease. It's not until 1989 that you get like a really major report on this. And not until the 1990s where chronic disease, like late 1990s, where chronic disease even starts to make its way into nutritional guidance in the forms of like dietary reference values. The food-based guidance and the dietary guidelines has always sort of been arguably a bit ahead of the evidence on linking diet to chronic disease. So yeah, I think like one of the big takeaways is like there's this history that like the public opinion on nutrition has like far outpaced where the science has been. And with that, kind of a second point is like we have never seriously funded nutrition science in this country. Like there was a period where you had decent clinical research center funding, and you know, you get all the links between fat composition, you know, detailing saturated fat compared to mono, compared to poly, compared to carb, compared to protein, and its effect on LDL and blood pressure. And then you get some larger actually disease outcome trials where you move beyond the biomarker of LDL or blood pressure, and you actually get a number of these fat replacement trials that have occurred, and then the things like the trials of hypertension prevention. But apart from those links between like saturated fat and LDL and sodium and blood pressure, there's not a lot of strong data, like especially if now all the topics now that you're thinking about, like, does the gut microbiome mediate chronic disease risk? How does ultra processing of foods influence disease risk? Like, and I'm sure you guys follow Kevin Hall's stuff where he's got like the one small 20 person RCT about UPFs and calorie intake that he's trying to dissect mechanisms of, or has been historically. But yeah, I found it quite striking that you actually see a drop off in funding for nutrition science, particularly these controlled feeding type studies, at the same period of time, basically over the last 30 years, where you get this huge increase in an interest in nutrition and chronic disease. So there's a major disconnect between the public perception of, like, of course diet influences chronic disease, and everybody's got a million hypotheses about it. And then you kind of look like somebody like me, who's like a PhD RD, thinking about having a career in doing controlled metabolic interventions to understand how food affects health. And I don't actually see a career in it because there's like no money for it. There's no funding from the government for it.
Could you put into perspective of how much money is put into this versus something else like that is heavily funded?
Getting a number on this is virtually impossible. The Office of Nutrition Research, like, will put out all these numbers about, oh, this is how much of the NIH budget goes to nutrition, but they'll like include, okay, you're using a virus to knock out a subpopulation of neurons in rats and studying how that influences energy expenditure and eating behavior. And they call that nutrition research. If you, it's very, and they have like an internal database I've never been able to find to actually test, like, how many trials is the NIH funding per year of understanding, like, what about food composition influences chronic disease biomarkers? It's pretty limited. You'll see some decent numbers because they funded a few things like Vital, where the omega-3 and vitamin D trials, and I have big issues in the design of those and how they were done. But one of the tensions that didn't come through a ton in the piece, but I've actually been considering writing something else, because you have like 20 pages to write everything you want to say in these pieces. And so I have about 20 pages of unused writing that didn't make it into the final. But the history of nutrition also starts with, like, in agriculture. And so nutrition departments get built out of the agricultural extension type system. And, you know, agricultural chemistry used to be like a major field of study. And so you have people understanding, like, what is food composition and the early sort of area of nutrition. But then you also have a separate area of nutrition research begin in medicine. So particularly in nutritional anemias, there's a lot of early work of people doing what we would call nutrition research in, like, B12 and iron response, folic acid responsive anemias. And so you have, like, nutrition evolving in the medical space. And obviously that continues to grow and evolve, and you get more like obesity medicine that has taken on a lot of nutrition too. But when you look now and you look back at how it's evolved, it's like totally disjointed, where you have people with very, if you look at the field of nutrition, which is so interdisciplinary, and it's nutrition, food composition, food psychology, neuroscience, obesity, cardiometabolic disease, you can't really look at one like center of excellence and see all of that expertise really there. And so the field, I think, is like quite disjointed. And so that was that's something I think I've noticed. I forget what your leading question was for why I started talking about this.
I mean, to put it in perspective, how much other areas of science get funded compared to nutrition?
I think one of the things on this is that the NIH model funds largely foundational basic research. And the goal is to, like, they fund some clinical trials for sure, but not much, because the goal is to, like, get that basic tee up and pass it on to pharma to do the translation piece of it. And what you see in nutrition is this lacking. There's no funder for doing these sorts of things. And it's sort of outsourced to that's why I was talking about all the disjointed nutrition research infrastructure, because, like, they're sort of like, oh, well, USDA does the food stuff. But the USDA budget cannot possibly fund nutrition research at the degree that we need to be pumping it out. Like, if you have all these questions about, is it the energy density or the texture resulting from food processing or the food additives or whatever, I mean, there's like dozens of clinical trials that you would need to run and ideally would need to produce in a very short amount of time to start to influence regulation and policy. And Kevin Hall is doing one study that gets published every 5 years with 20 people, 2 weeks long. And, like, that's in no way a critique of him. It's just that's the rate of data that we are producing on these hot issues. And this is like an open secret in the field of nutrition. I mean, you look at external reviews of departments and they're always noting, oh, there's no human nutrition people left at your nutrition department. It's kind of like, yeah, there's no big grants for them. And to be a professor in a nutrition department, you need a big grant to get tenure. And so the field has sort of dissolved over the past 20 years as people have retired and been replaced by faculty lines that are molecular metabolism focused, so very cell biology, or global health, where a lot of money has gone. And so you have all these questions. I mean, you guys know it from social media that people have about nutrition, food composition, how it impacts everything from obesity to the microbiome, et cetera. And the capacity and ability to do controlled metabolic research to really understand that is pretty tough. And so when you look at dietary guidelines, like, you know, everyone had threw up their arms being like, oh my God, the dietary guidelines said that like ultra processed food data is like low quality, high risk of bias, and we're not going to make any recommendations off of it. Like, must be the industry shills that have bought out the DGAs. And it's like, no, we literally have not funded nutrition research in quite seriously ever. And then in the past 20 years, there was something called the General Clinical Research Centers, the GCRCs, that they started to basically be dissolved and transformed into another something called the CTSA, Clinical Translational Sciences Awards. And the funding model with that totally shifted. They don't really cover the dietitian, nursing, metabolic kitchen, all the things that you need at these clinical research centers to do controlled metabolic research. So it's just kind of evaporated. And you see it in headlines. Like, every headline is a commodity. So it's avocados do this, walnuts do this, blueberries do this, eggs do this. It's because the people funding nutrition research are a mix of USDA and commodity board funding. And that's all the like kind of trial evidence that we're really getting in the nutrition and chronic disease type space. So within the history of that piece, I sort of, one of my major conclusions is that, you know, saturated fat and sodium, we have pretty robust trial evidence to fall back on and rebut sort of politicized attacks about them. So we can, you know, when you see those politicized attacks, you can say, like, we have systematic reviews and meta-analyses, like looking at risk factors. We even have larger trials that have, they're not perfect, but they have attempted to look at disease endpoints. You go beyond those two topics, and we have such low quality evidence to really fall back on. And so I do call for like a massive reinvigoration of funding of doing nutrition science really rigorously within that paper.
Well,
so then let me ask you then from our perspective.
Oh. Yeah.
How are we? What the hell's going on?
I was going to say the MAHA report comes out though. Like, and they're basically saying, just forget about these guidelines. Just, and they kind of come up with their own thing. So you skimmed over their little MAHA report. How does your paper tie into it? I mean, basically you're saying there's not even enough funding to do anything, and they want to cut back, based on my understanding of all this stuff, and make it simple, even though we don't have that data.
Yeah, it's kind of funny going through the history of the dietary guidelines, and they were like, we are going to revolutionize nutrition recommendations by having a 4-page report. And I'm like, have you seen the 1-pager 7 to 8 bullet points that was the 1980, 1985, 1990 dietary guidelines? Like, they kind of get critiqued for being 400-page things now, but that's because the dietary guidelines have evolved into essentially like scientific review and policy documents to inform all sorts of federal type programs. But it used to be that they were like relatively short and sort of like consumer friendly, high level things that were put out. And another like theme that I put at the end of the dietary guidelines history piece is that like there have been so many tweaks and changes to the language, the wording, the food guide. So you have like the My Pyramid and then My Plate, and you have changing of language being like, don't add more whole grains, substitute refined grains for whole grains, like not convey that you should be eating more calories. And now we focus more on dietary patterns as opposed to single nutrients. All of these tweaks in language have done absolutely nothing for population health metrics. And it's almost, you feel a little bit delusional reading it. I mean, and it's 2020's hindsight, but you're like, did people really think these small changes in wording were going to like, this is the linchpin way that we need to communicate to the public and that'll change everything? And I think the reality of the dietary guidelines is that there's just no political meat behind them. Like, people, you can have the most rigorous science in the world. I do think we need more rigorous science for sure, but that's only half the battle. You need to really have policies that take what those guidelines say and start to implement them. And that requires a whole look. And this is part of why I have no faith in MAHA, is that you need to look at the entire food and agricultural value chain, from, you know, what we grow, how we grow it, all the way through how it's getting processed and into producers and turns into whatever ends up on your plate. And think about every step of that and every policy lever that you could push to get healthier food on people's plate and actually being eaten. And that requires picking a lot of economic winners and losers and political winners and losers. And there has never been a Congress that has ever taken this seriously and thought about this and then tried to implement it. I mean, you saw a lot of the Maha energy wrestling, like government hasn't done anything. And you're like, Michelle Obama tried so hard to just get sodium lower in school lunches. And she grew like a garden and like bragged about not using pesticides in it. And now like, and like the you know, certain aspects of the political audience got, she got totally pilloried at every step. I mean, her, the effort on sodium and some of the drama after the 2015 dietary guidelines, like literally led to a total reanalysis and huge $1 million systematic reviews of sodium to inform new dietary reference values for sodium and chronic disease. It ultimately didn't change any of our recommendations that we've had for quite a while. They just still said, like, you know, chronic disease risk increases particularly above 2300 milligrams per day, and most Americans are eating above 3000 milligrams. So there's a lot of progress there, and we still don't even have voluntary sodium reduction recommendations from the FDA for industry because it got held up by Congress. And so, yeah, I think the lack of political will to do anything is like a real energy that Maha has picked up on, but there's a huge revisionist history here and a total unwillingness to like address, I mean, like the massive societal change that would need to occur if you were going to change the food system. Like they don't, I don't think they have the political, they pretend to have the political energy, but it's around like food additives. So food additives is like maybe number 105 on my list of things that I would change about the food, the food system.
Well, so, I mean, let me ask you this though, from our kind of practical clinical world, obviously, you know, both of us are obesity specialists. As an endocrinologist, obviously I'm getting into obesity, type 2 diabetes, type 1 diabetes. We both do a lot of lipids, cardiovascular risk, all that cardiometabolic stuff you talked about. I mean, it's my impression, I don't want to speak for Spencer. I mean, you know, we've followed the nutrition history, at least in our careers, and tried to look into the history and the data behind it. And you kind of talk about how poor the nutrition studies are, but kind of in our macro world, I guess, there are some things we feel like we know pretty well, even though nutrition science is very hard, right? I mean, we know that, for example, cutting sources of carbs helps with weight loss, cutting sources of fat helps with weight loss. They all reduce calorie intake. You know, I think there are certainly good data showing higher, you know, like whole food, plant forward, getting nutrients from vegetables, fruits, all that kind of stuff is pretty good. It gets, you know, some of the problems get within the weeds, you know, like you talk, you know, I don't know, red meat, processed red meat, all that kind of stuff. You know, and obviously we have some of the Mediterranean diet type trials, you know, where they do certain things. Now, these are trials, they're big trials, cardiovascular outcome trials, but yeah, they're imperfect for sure. But so in our world, we feel like we have a lot of data to help people with treating obesity, treating type 2 diabetes, reducing cardiovascular risk. It's just that nutrition is so much more complicated than that. I don't know if you, that makes any sense as to how you reconcile that to the
behavior change and changing systems. That's what Kevin's saying.
You're getting into like public health system based changes. I mean, right? I mean,
right. I think we can pick this apart. I definitely think there's a lot in nutrition science where people get lost in the individual trees and kind of miss the forest. Like, and so there's a lot of things that I think we know reasonably well. Things like sodium, blood pressure, fat composition, LDL, the basic energy balance type stuff is not going to change. When you go and look at systematic reviews of the evidence, though, for obesity interventions for kids, it's not great. Like school and food environment interventions, some of them have done the opposite. They have increased BMI instead of decreasing. There's very little progress. Like we can move the needle a little bit on BMI clinically, and obviously you see lots of individual variation in that, but overall you can't really point to like that as a blockbuster intervention. And part of that could be because we're not doing the best interventions, and we don't have the best data to base things on, and some of it is an implementation science issue and a lack of political will to broadly change the food environment. But like I think a perfect example of kind of what I'm talking about is when you look at the sodium. So they made a new DRI value in 2019, the chronic disease risk reduction value. It's the first time the DRIs have ever had an explicitly chronic disease based DRI value. It was 2019, which was a little late to the party to me. But they established one for sodium, and the evidence was too inconclusive for potassium. That to me is kind of wild. And I think particularly we have not invested in these large clinical endpoint studies, which are super hard to do. I'm not saying that like we can just like lock people up for 5 years in a metabolic ward, but we have never really invested. Everyone just has kind of said, oh, it's too hard. Like, we're not going to do it. And old school studies relied on institutionalized populations largely, or people like veterans when we used to provide care for them. But if we throw our hands up and just say, oh, we're never going to be able to do like cardiovascular endpoint trials, then, or cancer endpoint trials, whatever it is, then we are just resigning to the fact that like the quality of data in nutrition is always going to get ranked super low. It's always going to be deflated from a policy standpoint. So why we don't have like, you mentioned the Mediterranean diet Pretty Med study, like we should have, why do we only have one? That is like a huge, that's like a huge failure, I think. And there's no way to do a Pretty Med study in America. Like, and people have talked about how you kind of adapt that. Like, people don't eat sofritas and a liter of olive oil a week.
I do.
But so how do we really like invest in the nutrition research infrastructure to strengthen the quality of data? And I don't think it needs to be perfect being the enemy of good. Like, we have so much better tools to understand, you know, in what's happening molecularly, microbiome, etc., to like understand individual determinants of like the individualized response. We have better imaging, as you guys know, from the keto CTA study. Like, why do we not have better data on like atherosclerotic progression with diet change as an outcome? It's not a perfect clinical endpoint, but it would be like a piece of the pie. And I think in nutrition science, people have just resolved themselves to be like, well, the most we'll ever have is 2-week studies measuring a biomarker, and then we have observational studies with self-reported data setting endpoints, and that's it. That's the best nutrition will do. If that is the best nutrition will do, nutrition, people saying food is medicine will always get laughed at. Policy-wise, it will always be defanged because there's so much uncertainty in that data. And so I think we need a massive investment and to think really critically. And I think there's ways, like, you know, Kevin Hall wants to build a big domiciled feeding center. I think that's possible. I think we should be partnering with like food delivery companies like Green Chef and whatnot to be doing research studies. Like, this is going to take tons of resources, but we need to be getting super innovative to increase the rigor within our science. And then at that same time, work heavily on implementation and policy. There's a lot of low-hanging fruit things like voluntary sodium reduction in the food supply, like, still hasn't happened. That is like wild to me.
So what's the bottom line of what Maha's report says we're going to do now? Because all those things that I feel like we all know, it seems like those are relatively basic truths that everyone has said, okay, yeah, our food supply is not very healthy. We had too much restaurant food, too much highly processed, highly caloric, hyper palatable carbs and fats, and we're suffering obesity and obesity related chronic diseases. Now suddenly RFK is acting like he's the first one to say it, even though it's been discussed basically my whole adult life, and we've all been talking about what maybe imperfect data we have to help more like individuals, because our politicians can't agree on doing any, you know, what to what degree do we even want government intervening or not intervening, and then to what those interventions are have to be based on pretty good science. I get that, right? I mean, nobody's gonna, you know, I don't know. So what the heck is the Maha report saying we're supposed to do? Like I'm looking at it, I'm like, I don't understand it. Like, some people have said, oh, it's just a rehash of RFK's little pet peeves, and that's not anything meaningful. The heck are they talking about?
I mean, that I think that's largely true. The first executive order about like protecting kids, they sort of like wax poetic about environmental chemicals are a problem and ultra processed foods are a problem. And they say some like dog whistle things about vaccines. This report just expands the rationale a little bit more. It has a lot of Microsoft Excel graphs that are like really cringy. It's not the best like data visualization by any means. I haven't read every word of the 60-page report, but I skimmed enough to kind of, they paint this bleak picture of childhood in America that really, like, it's, they're doing it obviously for politicized reasons. Like, childhood in America is still better than it was in many decades past. Yeah. Like, you're not drinking lead-filled water anymore. Like, we have actually had a ton of public health wins that I think for political reasons they do not want to acknowledge at all. They're painting this doom and gloom, like, being a child in America right now is worse than ever been. You're in a toxic filled environment with toxic food, and being exposed to all these things and like vaccines, wink wink. But the report isn't like explicitly anti-vax, but it's talking about like ultra processed foods. There's like a call out for seed oils. There's some people have come out saying it's not hard enough on environmental chemicals. But like, if you ask, well, what policies are they going to use to enact any of this?
Right.
There's nothing.
It's all talk.
It's all been posturing. And I think that's one of my like biggest concerns with anything with MAHA is they say a lot of things. They make it seem like they're doing things. Like, they had very performative, like, we have agreements with the food industry to take out food additives. And the industry came out the next day, like, we don't have any agreements. And also, like, they're doing nothing, like, they've changed nothing about the Federal Register to, like, remove artificial food dyes, even though you would think they had based on headlines.
And then the other part is, like, they seem to be going after these almost like red herrings. Is that what you'd call it? Or they're chasing false goals, like the food. I mean, I think everyone agrees that somehow we have to help people minimize ultra processed food intake, minimize empty calorie intake. But then there, the actual policies that come out, people
how are they going to do
arguing.
It?
Yeah, well, but they say, well, then they're doing things that, and again, this gets into real politics, and I'm going to get into that. That they're reducing access to the healthier foods for some of these kids. Which again, going back to your point about are kids healthier or sicker? Well, actually, if I'm not mistaken, the morbidity and mortality is a lot lower these days due to vaccines, et cetera. It's just that we are struggling more with our sort of stuff, the obesity and obesity-related risk.
We have
that
new
comes
problems
with the stuff. Yeah. So yeah, it's more of their future risk that's the kids are sick with as opposed to their current risk as adults. But yeah, I mean, food dyes. So I feel like there are much better lower hanging fruit than that. You know, no pun intended. For example, I think I always used to use an example when people say, oh, well, if you were going to be big government and lay the hammer down on something, I would say, God, based upon the evidence, if we wanted to do big government bannings on things, I'd say, all right, get rid of sugar, sweetened beverages. Allow all the diet beverages out there, but no sugar sweetened beverages. And now we have to close all the restaurants, but that's going to destroy our economy. I feel like if we did those two things from
other
big government perspective,
other than shawarma, please.
But you know what I'm saying? But that's not going to happen. Talk about a slippery slope. So I don't know what they're getting at. They're talking about these things that don't make any sense.
I think when they were talking about food additives, I initially was like, all right, maybe this is just a political win to show that they can do something. But now they've actually shown they're doing nothing on food additives, and they're pretending that they're doing something. So, like, they have control. Like, the FDA could modify the Federal Register. They could be working with the Congress that they control to, like, actually legislate. None of that is actually happening at least on the issue of food additives. So I think it's weird because I'm like, this is the lowest hanging fruit, easy win that if you wanted to actually do something and then use that as like political momentum to do other things, it'd be great. But they're not actually doing anything on it. They're getting a weird political momentum out of it. And then what you see is in reality is DOGE is doing the complete opposite. So they're cutting, like, you know, you're talking about, oh, food additives need to get out of the food supply and we need to improve new, better ones. And there's all sorts of issues in that. I don't think we have time to unpack, but like, the DOGE has cut like the toxicologists at the FDA, and it's like, and then they're talking about, we're going to close the generally recognized and safe loophole where basically companies get to register their own food additives. They did their own safety review and they register it as generally recognized and safe so it can be used. And kind of like, it's still, there has to be data and evidence. I don't want to like fearmonger about the loophole, but the loophole should be closed. We should have an FDA doing the safety reviews here. But you can't do those safety reviews like by firing toxicologists. You need to like quadruple, if not like 10x increase the foods program's toxicology staff at the FDA, and then DOGE is cutting them all. So like, in my, I've had a blog post running in my head of just like titled like Doge is humiliating Maha, because literally everything Maha says it wants to do, Doge walks it back. And of course, none of this gets into the media ecosystem that's increasingly siloed so that people mm-hmm. really know what's going on. But like, we have so little nutrition research that's high quality, that's actionable and can be used by regulators and be used by the food industry. Like, I would love nutrition research that says reformulate your products this way. Like, that would be amazing. We should be putting research into like, how do we have safer preservatives that allow you to get the sodium even lower in foods? How do we modify food texture, caloric density, things that affect eating rate, all the psychological determinants we know that allow for ultra processed foods to be overconsumed in a single sitting and kind of override our satiety cues. And I'm not saying this is a cure all for obesity, but we should be doing all these incremental steps and throwing tons of resources at it to try and see what works, what doesn't work, make progress. And that is not going to happen. Like, if you're cutting everything at the federal level from the research capacity to the regulatory staff. And so the whole thing just sort of makes your brain explode, because the media posturing by the administration is quite, it's almost gaslighting to be like, yeah, we're going to really take action on food additives or infant formula or whatever. And then you have even less staff than you had in the beginning. And to be clear, the FDA foods program, it gets totally lambasted for like not doing enough. And there's some maybe truth to that, that like the FDA got too focused on drugs. But the funding for the foods program, they have to do arguably so much more with like checking the food supply, regulating all the additives, like really the food safety side of things take precedence, because it's like acute risk where, you know, bacterial contamination things can really cause immediate death. And they didn't ever have the funding to do chronic disease all that well. They sort of started to at the end of Biden. But they don't get users fees like the FDA drug side of things does. Like the pharmaceutical industry has to pay money to the FDA to like basically conduct all these reviews, and it's in their best interest to do that. There's no equivalent of that for the food side. So they are like massively, massively underfunded, and Congress has never done anything about it. But Congress doesn't even do anything anymore. It's just like a totally dysfunctional thing. So yeah, it is. The whole Maha thing, like, I feel pretty confident now that we are 120 days in or whatever, that there's no meat to anything. They're going to keep doing a lot of performative stuff, while on the back end, all of the wheels of government that would make those happen are just going to get cut even more. And there's, I want to be really clear, there is no privatized way to meet these public health nutrition goals. Like, you will have the top, you already see this, like the top economic classes within society are chasing down shopping at Air Huon and Whole Foods for the, you know, organic GMO free. I mean, the list of free things that it's supposedly free of goes on and on and on for these, like chasing down arguably phantom hazards. And then you still have a lot of people whose diets are a muffin and orange juice at breakfast and a sugar sweetened beverage and a burger at lunch, and all in well excess of the calories they need, not living in environments that promote physical activity. I see a lot of stuff happening on the first part where, okay, we're going to get a food additive out so you can eat your Pop-Tarts and Flamin' Hot Cheetos now with less food dyes.
I guess that was the point I was ultimately trying to get to. You know what I mean? I feel like we have enough data to give basic, good, solid dietary recommendations for most people. However, implementing those are easier said than done. And yes, on a bigger scale, that does take public health things. We're literally at this moment making a podcast to help educate people on that. So what you just said are the example. But then, yeah, like Spencer, you made your memes that make people mad all the time about how an organic Oreo is still an Oreo.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
I don't think any of these people have ever actually worked with anybody. Like just watching what they're doing, it's like you don't even know what's going to change behavior. You don't know anything about public health. Like, we've been trying, as Kevin said. I mean, the dietary guidelines are relatively reasonable. They're saying they basically want them to be carnivore or keto. And even if they made them keto, go ahead, make them keto, make them carnivore. I don't care. It's not going to change anything.
On the research front, I want to be maybe clarify, like, I think you guys have very clinician perspectives, and like, I'm not trying to say the DASH diet is like bad because we don't have like cardiovascular endpoint trials on it. But what we've seen like at a dietary guidelines level, which is again intending to influence policy, is even sodium, where you have the trials of hypertension prevention that took pre-hypertensive people, reduced sodium in the diet with a behavioral intervention. And we have like 25-year follow-up data from that. Like on top of controlled feeding studies showing sodium is a determinant of blood pressure. You've seen insane political attacks that sodium has barely stood up to. And still, arguably, you're not getting regulation happening. If any other dietary recommendation that we had got that level of politicized attack, it would crumble. Like UPFs are going to crumble. Food additives are arguably going to crumble, which is probably why they're doing nothing at the federal registration level. So like what a clinician recommends, I think we all like, there's no prescriptive advice here per se. There's lots of options, lots of things we think are generally moving the needle. And when the baseline is the standard American diet, most pivots right. are going to be for the yeah. best. But when you think about how do we have actionable policy that's going to stand up and speak for itself and push back against the industries that are inevitably going to say, hey, that's our product, we're going to really question that science, a lot of nutrition science crumble. And so that's where I think looking at the history, I mean, it has been politicized at multiple times. I mean, the entry of nutrition advice based around chronic disease into the dietary guidelines and RDAs was severely inhibited in the late 70s and early 80s because people at the time where there was limited data, people were like, I don't know, does reducing saturated fats and increasing vegetable oils and that LDL lowering, does that really translate to anything meaningful at a population level? Are there side effects? And people were kind of taking that like evidence-based medicine kind of approach to public health recommendations and saying like, what's the number needed to treat and the number needed to harm? And you can't really answer that. I think we can answer it for a couple questions now, nutrition, but there's still so many things we cannot. Like, it is crazy to me, potassium, we could not get a competent chronic disease risk reduction value on because the dose-response relationship and all these sorts of things were not strong enough, which means there's a whole bunch of fundamental research linking diet to chronic disease risk factors that we need for better policy. And again, for like informing industry, there are a lot of good actors in industry. I'm not like an industry shill, but like there are people who are like, you know, we can't get the nutrition community to put forward, you know, reasonable evidence saying like, do this and it will improve population health. So we're just going to add charcoal to it because that's going to sell a whole bunch more. But there are definitely bad actors in the industry, but there are ones who are like, you just don't see anything coming out in the literature that would say like reformulating our product in this way is actually going to impact obesity and things while still being able to sell it. So I would love it for industry, the government, philanthropy to all get together and like revolutionize yeah. the funding of nutrition science and look at a way of like, can we formulate products in a way that people will still buy and enjoy, but also are not like super hyperphagic, basically. It's kind of like a, whether that's even possible, I don't know, but we haven't really put the money into it to right. try.
But that's far too rational and would be far too meaningful. And, you know, nobody wants to get away from their tribalistic political fight. So, you know, whatever, that's fine.
I don't think anything's going to happen over the next, you know, 3 years or 3.5 years with this MAHA team in there. They're going to keep making these types of reports and give each other high fives, and that's about it.
Well, and probably sell well, stuff. I mean, because it's like Casey Means. I mean, like now she's going to be
Paul Saladino, all these
all these guys that just like they're selling essentially falsehoods. I mean, the whole seed oil things. I mean, that's like kind of a that's a complete like bullshit thing confounded by, you know, processed foods probably. And Casey Means literally just has a CGM company. She's an ear, nose, throat surgical dropout, and then claims to be a metabolic expert so she can sell continuous glucose monitors who don't need it. And now she's in charge. It's like, what the hell is going on?
And is mad that she wasn't taught that UPFs impacted mortality when she was in medical school, when there was no data on UPFs and mortality when she was in medical school. And right. she went to medical school, not to nutrition school. So like, but right. I think on a point here, like I hope, my hope for MAHA at this point is that they just don't cause harm.
Yeah.
And so like at this point, like playing around with food additives, whatever, like please don't replace them with food additives that are allergenic and cause anaphylactic shock in kids, which a lot of the new food allergen or a lot of the new food additives, like about new colorants, have that potential. We don't know like wide use data. So the food allergy pediatric community has already come out being like, maybe don't do this. And then the other issue is like, you've got Callie Means has tweeted like, that seed oils are so toxic and they're in infant right. formula, and that you should feed your kid toddler milk because it's a whole milk based and it doesn't have seed oils in it. And I'm like, you're going to fucking kill kids. Like, that mm-hmm. is the reality. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Well, so yeah, to your point, that is the biggest concern, is that there is going to be harm from this, because there, some of the premise seems reasonable. Everyone agrees we got to improve food environment and all these different things. But then when they start cherry picking these BS targets that are not really true and then result in harm, like going back to your Pop-Tart example. So if people have this false sense of security that, all right, now we can eat all the processed foods we want because they changed the food dyes, which have nothing to do with anything. Now it's just going to make things worse. It's almost like what they blame the old food pyramid on and say, oh, everyone, you know, we got obesity because of the low fat recommendation. So then everyone just ate highly processed, high carb sugar things. It's like, well, that's not what the nutrition thing said. They didn't say to do that. It's a side effect of the people making things the way they wanted to make them to trick it. I don't know. God.
Some of the new Maha report sort of like lambasts old reductionist sort of approaches in nutrition, and they're going to focus on the whole foods, yada yada yada. But like, some of that sounds fine, it's whatever. But then like, they do the exact opposite, and they mm-hmm. take a reductionist approach, saying it's the food additives that are causing stuff, bad issues. But like, when you apply that to like sort of whole foods, appeal to nature, when you start applying that to infant formula, we've lost the plot. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, people in podcasts might not know, like, do not feed your kid toddler's milk, like your infant toddler's milk. Like, the protein is too high. The electrolyte, the minerals are all off for what an infant can form. Like, we have a long learned history of babies dying from feeding cow's milk and various modified versions of that. I wrote a whole Substack article on this that led to, like, you know, you have to modify cow's milk to get it closer in composition to infant breast milk, or you can literally cause not only like iron deficiency that's going to affect brain development in the infant, but you can cause acute kidney injuries and electrolyte abnormalities that will kill your kid if not end up in the ICU. And so I'm like, some of the things are being put forth here, you're curing a non-issue of seed oils and breast milk,
of
and
course
exposing to like actual acute harm, and they don't know what they don't know, I think, like
but yeah. That's why you use experts, and they're trying to kill the concept of
mouth.
Yeah, well, they're trying to kill the concept of expertise. So it's the era of the death of the experts, and they're literally saying, don't listen to the experts. And then they say, oh, we need more experts doing the research. And it's like, some things have already been done. Like you're saying, now we're going to go backwards because we have an idiot making bullshit claims.
Like, right, what? And I think the anti-expert thing gets at like public health has lost a lot of trust, particularly post-COVID. And the question I have, and I don't see it from Maha, is like, are you trying to build back public trust in official recommendations, or are you trying to profit for yourself mm-hmm. off of that? And I really question the motives of some of the people who are in the Maha orbit, like, because they've totally eschewed experts, and that's a huge problem that I think experts need to take seriously and think about how we do science communication, not like respecting people's autonomy to make decisions to some degree. Understand, there's a lot of talking mm-hmm. down to, I think, during COVID that happened.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Maybe it wasn't from the government, and maybe it was just from like SciComm people. I feel like a lot of people's frustrations politically and everything are just what they see on Twitter, which is maybe not reality.
Spencer's memes caused it, probably.
Yeah, Spencer, your memes are not, you know, they're calling out, not calling in, Spencer. Come on.
What an asshole. I'm sure people thought we were talking down too, because we were trying to, you know, get people to get vaccinated and stuff. Well, ironically, it was Trump pushed it. But,
okay. Yeah, but people is because people don't understand the scientific process. And in a pandemic, it was all happening very quickly, and things were changing so quickly that they didn't understand that that's how it works. We didn't have the answers. So it was kind of like, okay, we think this, right, and then it ended up being something else.
It is like, we are watching, like, the USDA has weekly actions videos right now. Makari and Bhattacharya and Prasad are sitting down doing like live podcast style interviews. And like, I literally pitched this to friends of like, when I was in a postdoc at Baylor College of Medicine, the president of Baylor was doing like weekly YouTube updates. And just communicate. Sometimes they're a little cringe, but like, it was like nice. They were like, you know, they were giving you an update, humanizing the public health process. And the fact that we didn't get that at all from everyone at the FDA, CDC level, like there should have just been like a human sitting there explaining things in a cogent way, saying, this is what we know, this is what we don't know, this might be subject to change because the data's not actually good.
Yeah.
We're making up the whole 6 feet thing, but it's reasonable enough. Like just being honest with people and being human about it. I think the FDA has learned, unfortunately now at the wrong time, that they need to like really engage. And what people want is this long form, genuine, authentic advice. And so I think they're getting some things right on the messaging, but the actual message I have a lot of concerns about. And I don't see them actually trying to like bring back in experts and repair the concept of expertise necessarily. They're still like relying on experts told you this. Experts said to feed your kids seed oils and sugar and infant formula. And I'm like, oh my God. And that's never been said.
Right. No, they continue to undermine the scientific process and expertise so that they can have their grifters sell stuff, apparently. That's what it comes across as.
They're all a bunch of grifters, honestly.
Yeah, it's really too bad. I don't know what to do other than, you know, try to educate.
All right. So if we're wrapping this up, I know none of us like to wrap it up, but
oh my God.
we just got kicked off. Now we own the Docs Who Lift. We're fine. We don't have a Spotify deal. Not yet.
Not anymore. Definitely not gonna get it.
The Lily execs listening to this are like, well, I don't know, maybe, or maybe Nova will pick up on this. I don't know, someone.
You must get interesting sponsorship emails.
we're gonna get this. All right, so there's not people. We don't have enough resources into nutritional research. Yeah. It's probably not going to happen.
They're cutting more funds for research.
They're just cutting the experts from doing the proper research, while saying that the experts basically. Get, like you said, gaslighting us. Maha comes out with performative reports talking about things that, yeah, some of it's reasonable, some of it's just absolutely nonsense and doesn't really matter because nothing's actually going to happen from that. Is that the gist of kind of what we discussed?
Yeah, I think so.
And how can people check out your review on the on the history of nutrition science for those who actually want to kind of read into it, it may be very helpful, as I don't think people understand how the heck this has all come about anyways, and so then they people think science is different than what it really is and where the issues lie.
Yeah, I'll send you the link to it. It's in the journal Annual Reviews of Nutrition, and so it's very much a where we've been, how we got to where we are, a little bit of my perspective on like where we need to go. I would probably even change things about it now. I mean, I submitted this months ago. I would probably change some things now, but I write at Substack as well, just about some of these issues, and then on Instagram constantly just word vomiting into my stories about the daily happenings a little bit. It's my own personal therapy and it's quite chaotic, but I think there's a lot about, there's so much we've learned in nutrition. There's so much more to learn. I think there's a lot more to learn about how to implement, how to communicate, how to engage the public in research and get them kind of on board to understand the research process a little bit more and appreciate it. But if there's one thing anybody's listening, it is that like what Maha says and what Doge does are at such odds right now that Maha physically cannot achieve its goals. It will not happen until something dramatically changes. And so I try and speak to people in Maha and, just be real about it. The vibes are right. Like, we have not taken nutrition seriously enough. We do have tons of nutrition problems. Somebody needs to do something about it. I just, the what we're doing about it, it cannot be performative posturing that has no meat behind it. Spencer loves meat, and so we need to have as much meat as possible.
Big fat pieces of meat.
But seriously, like there's just nothing. We've never had the strong political will. You see it in bursts over time, where like there was a White House, the first conference on nutrition happened, and from that you get things like women, infants, children, and so we need to take this energy and actually have it follow through, so that we look back in 20, 30 years and say that Maha energy turned into like the top premier nutrition research centers in the world that revolutionize our understanding of nutrition science and how to impact, how to formulate food so that it is not causing lots of problems. And also, like, we made all these regulations and policy that really drove industry to make products that weren't harming our health nearly as much. I don't think we are on track to look back in 20 years and think that. I think there's going to be some rich people who buy CGMs, and there's going to be some Pop-Tarts that are still Pop-Tarts without artificial food dyes. And there might be some like disastrous changes to infant formula if what people are tweeting about is true. But I'm hoping they just update like the micronutrient levels or something.
So we need some better and bigger Maha energy. All right.
Yeah.
Better and bigger.
Big Maha energy.
Wider. All right. Well, everybody can find Dr. Klatt on Instagram, and he's also on Twitter, X. And check out his Substack. We'll put links to all that stuff in there if you want to have an actual sensible view of nutrition and research. Thanks for coming on, Dr. Klatt. Always a pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
Here's Godspeed. Our outro.
This podcast is for entertainment and education and information purposes only. Remember, the physicians on this podcast are not your physician. It should not be considered professional or personalized medical advice. It should not be used to replace speaking with your physician or medical professional to discuss your specific health concerns. The topics discussed should not be used solely to diagnose or treat any condition. As a result, we are not responsible for any unwanted medical outcomes. The views and opinions discussed are of those of the host only and do not represent those of any other entities. We'll be right back.